I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the challenges prisoners face when they attempt to re-enter society. We're going to talk about the ways people can help them and the ways that prisoners can help themselves. We're going to talk about the support systems that are in place and whether more such support systems are needed. We have a great group of guests on hand. Allen Superior Court Judge John Serbeck, Superintendent of the Indianapolis Reentry Educational Facility, Stephen Kiever, and facility resident Michael Coffey. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits at WFYI.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the challenges that prisoners face when they reenter society. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'm joined today by a great group of guests, starting with, on the phone, calling from his office in Fort Wayne, Allen Superior Court Judge John Serbeck. Judge Serbeck, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be included or invited.
It's good to have you here. And here in the studio with me are Stephen Kiever, who is the superintendent of the Indianapolis Reentry Educational Facility. Steve, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. And also with us is a resident of the facility, Michael Coffey. Michael, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's a privilege to be here today.
It's good to have you here. Well, Michael, I think I'm going to start with you, since you're the one who's sort of confronting this situation. Can you talk a little bit about what brought you to this point in your life?
Well, what brought me to this point in my life is a situation that I feel like many people out in the world today deal with and struggle with. And that problem would be drugs and being involved in worldly things and living that street lifestyle.
Well, and I guess specifically, I want to make clear to the audience that you were incarcerated, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And at what stage are you now? How much time have you served, and where are you?
At this point, I've served 2.5 years, and I'm at the halfway point. I have 2.5 years left on my sentence.
Okay, and what, you know, and I want to start with Michael because I think he helped set the stakes here. What are the things that worry you, concern you, even frighten you the most about reentering society?
Well, I would say that the things that frighten me or that I'm in fear of that when it comes to reentry into society are common things that I feel like most inmates and most people that are incarcerated in the state of Indiana fear most are employment, job security, and housing upon an individual's release. There are many people around the state, many guys incarcerated in the Department of Corrections that don't have the support system or don't have family members, whether it be in this state or any other state, and they're forced upon their release to be able to provide for themselves. And a lot of times getting out of prison, you know, what you expect when you're released from prison, those things aren't available to you.
Steve Kiever, can I ask you to describe a little bit about what the Indianapolis Reentry Educational Facility does, what your goals are there?
Well, this particular facility provides opportunities for individuals. We have specialists who promote pro-social aspects of lifestyles to the residents. We offer programming, educational work crews, and provide an environment that's similar as possible in a correctional setting, that would expose the residents to the same types of or similar types of circumstances that they're going to face on the streets. The opportunity to work, the opportunity to go to class, the opportunity to participate in programs and outside activities, you know, is their selection.
And what did, you know, if I were to ask you to boil down what your mission is in a sentence, what would that be?
The mission of the Indianapolis Reentry Educational Facility is to obviously provide public safety, because that's our first requirement. But then, secondly, to prepare these individuals for release and to provide the lifestyle choices that they would be able to make in order to sustain a successful lifestyle on the streets and reduce the possibility of their return to incarceration.
Judge Serbeck, how important are programs like this?
Oh, they're essential.
In what ways?
Well, as Steve mentioned, and we've been doing this up here since 2001, and we have always approached it as a public safety project. The public is far better off if we can assist folks coming out of the Department of Correction, productively reintegrate into society. That group of people nationally tends to get back into trouble at the rate of about two-thirds within 3 years. Two-thirds of them will be back in penitentiary in 3 years. Or that's what we learned about 10 years ago. And I think those numbers are a little lower than that now, but not a great deal. So it's to the benefit of the general community if we can help these people in becoming productive, getting jobs, having a secure place to live, and overall being productive within the community.
Well, and obviously your efforts to some degree have been, well, not to some degree, have been nationally recognized. What, you know, what do you think has been the key to your success there?
I don't know that I can summarize that easily. But we began in 2000 with the concept, again, even then on the basis of public safety, that it's a benefit to the community to assist these folks. We spent about a year and a half designing the program. We opened our program, which is a reentry court, runs very much like a drug court, on the drug kind of the drug court protocol that was proven in Florida in the late 80s, early 90s. Wherein there is direct immediate supervision of a judicial officer. There is case management. Case managers are assigned to individuals. Programming is done pursuant to an evaluation. As soon as we have folks come in, we do a forensic evaluation and see what folks need, whether it be substance abuse, issues, life skills issues, any broad range of things. I would agree with Michael that our two biggest issues are always employment and housing. Mm-hmm. We've been very lucky up here to have a not-for-profit who began in our own organization as an employment specialist, if you will. They have split out into a not-for-profit called Blue Jacket. And they've been very effective at training people to search for jobs, and not only search for jobs, it's not just a resume class, but as well some additional life skills about keeping jobs once you're there, what employers will expect. And further, Tony's gotten a step further and is moving into the transitional employment type of market where he's employing folks. As do various temporary services in that fashion. We have not been able to address housing as well. We don't have an institutional housing facility as they do in Indy. They do in South Bend and in several other cities around the state. We don't have that kind of a facility. We rely on our halfway houses, who've been very good at taking folks who are in need.
We are talking about the challenges facing prisoners who are attempting to reenter society here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Judge Serbeck, I'm going to take a step back here and just, what problem were you trying to solve? I guess what prompted, where the need, I want to get some sense of why these programs are the innovation that they are.
I think the best way to answer that is just to tell you real directly how we got started. We had a new mayor in 2000. He called his friend at the Justice Department in Washington, who had experience with these kinds of things, who was also a Fort Wayne native. The two of them called our coordinator, director of community corrections. And they have become our operational arm. It's the community alternative sentencing structure that's funded through the Department of Correction, the legislature to the Department of Correction. Those three people began working on this structure. The mayor called Department of Justice saying, I'm the new mayor. I think we have a crime problem, and I want to figure out a way to address it. The Justice Department gentleman had worked on projects like this in the past. None of them had been sustained, but he was at least familiar with the concept that folks who come out of the penitentiary are not equipped yet to reintegrate. There was a real basic article published at the time. It was very popular. Had a gentleman, senior advisor from Urban Institute, who now runs the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York. But the title of his article was They All Come Back, which impressed all of us here that like 95% of the folks who go to the penitentiary will come back. And when they come back, they will probably be less capable of dealing with the community than they were when they went away.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience over the 10 years since we've started doing this has proven that out. The Department of Corrections is a place for really bad people who've done really bad things, who we want to keep there as long as possible. Everybody else, we're far better off dealing with in the community, and we can improve those recidivism rates. We've probably reduced recidivism by about a third. From that 66% that I mentioned earlier of the folks that we work with, simply by providing them with support and skills. We've developed an excellent relationship, for instance, with our community mental health center. And it's becoming painfully obvious how many of the folks who've been at the Department of Correction probably got to the Department of Corrections as a result of mental illness or a combination of things, including significant mental illness. And our community mental health center is helping us substantially. They're a member of our team, help us with meds, help us with counseling. It's a matter of bringing all these things together to help somebody, all of which works for the overall benefit of the community.
Steve Keever, I'm going to say that, you know, this, it sounds like to me what I'm hearing is that to some degree this is an attempt to try to solve that problem that people have been talking about for a long time, that to some degree correctional facilities became finishing schools for career criminals, that they would go in having done something bad and learn how to do things that were even worse there, and there was no way to break that cycle. Is this an attempt to break that cycle?
Well, I think the statistics should certainly bear that out. As Judge Serbeck said, when this his initiative started in the early 2000s, that was obvious. So since that time, from a Department of Corrections standpoint, the idea and the initiation of the Indianapolis Reentry reentry educational program was created and implemented. And it is a totally different environment, as Mr. Coffey would be able to attest, than what you would find in a normal correctional setting. And in this setting, we have no controlled movement. They're freer to move around as they would be in society, which you're not going to find at any other location. And we offer specialized programs to assist in their reentry process.
We are talking about prisoner reentry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us 1-866-476-3881. My guests are Judge John Serbeck, Stephen Kiever, and Michael Coffey. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the challenges prisoners face as they reenter society. I'm fortunate to have as my guest Allen Superior Court Judge John Serbeck, who's calling in by phone from his office in Fort Wayne, Stephen Kiever, who is the superintendent of the Indianapolis Reentry Educational Facility. Stephen, whoever came up with that title clearly did not work in radio. That's a mouthful to get through. And Michael Coffey, who is a resident there. Michael, I want to bring the conversation back to you a little bit. With all of these services and these attempts to kind of intervene here, which ones do you find the most useful?
Well, first I'd like to say that at IREF offers so much that you can't receive at any other institution in the state of Indiana. What's most valuable for someone like me, and I'm speaking from a personal aspect, substance abuse treatment. Most inmates incarcerated around the state of Indiana, despite whatever crime they chose to commit, has some sort of need, an assessment need for the rehabilitation of substance abuse treatment. That's probably one of the most important things that IRS has to offer, in my opinion. Another is they have valuable inside and outside job related experiences at IREF. What I mean by that is there's 19 inside jobs for various different jobs like maintenance and kitchen worker, which could relate to any outside job. The outside jobs IREF has to offer, it gives inmates their valuable experience for work. Mm-hmm. And some of the companies and corporations that IREF allows the residents there to go out and work these jobs are places like NDOT, White River, the War Memorial. And a lot of these jobs also extend a helping hand when some of the guys are released. And there have been guys that have received job offers from some of these outside sources.
So it's that sense of connection as well. We are talking about prisoner reentry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Ray, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Certainly. Your question, please.
Well, my question was, I'm now living in Indianapolis, but I'm from Florida. And while I was in Florida, I was an employer, and I employed many people on a work release program. The issue was when they would get out, I would try and keep their jobs for them, but most of them wouldn't show because they would have thousands and thousands in an account that they built up from the work while they were in the system. So does Indianapolis or Indiana do anything to skirt that issue?
Good question. Thank you very much for the call, Ray. I'll throw that one to Judge Serbeck.
And I don't know that I have an answer.
Steve Kiever is signaling that he does, so I can throw it to him. Steve Kiever?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I have an absolute answer to that or not, but, each individual – based upon it, and I'm talking strictly from my facility and nowhere else, but it, some of this would be applicable to other as well. Individuals do earn differing amounts of money for the services they provide if they're on an outside crew and so forth. The crews that Mr. Coffey referred to earlier are basically agreements between state agencies. And by IREF providing those crews, then it saves taxpayers money as a result. The individuals who work on those crews are able to, they're paid a certain wage based upon whatever that agreement is.
What's the range on those wages? I mean, where did, what, at the low end and say the high end?
The low end, it goes from a quarter to $1.50 an hour.
Okay. So well below minimum wage.
It's well below minimum wage, but we provide them other benefits to stay with us as well. So,
yeah.
But so again, depending upon what an individual wants to spend on commissary, what other outside sources of income that they may have, or that their families and so forth provide to them, there are circumstances where some individuals, again, depending on their own situation, may have a fair amount of money when they're released.
But to get that fair amount, I mean, even at $1.50 an hour, to get to thousands of dollars, that means you have to have worked thousands of hours.
Yes, unless there's some other, unless, you know, you could have, for instance, somebody who's incarcerated who receives a pension from, say, the railroad or something. That's going somewhere, and ultimately they may ultimately have that type of money when they get out. So I can empathize with the caller's situation, because it is a potential circumstance that you would hope that you provide the responsibility ingrained in the individual when they leave. But of course, when they do leave, then they are free in society to do as they will.
Now, are these programs more or less expensive than traditional incarceration?
Less expensive.
Less expensive.
I mean, they're not cheap, and I can't even give you off the top of my head cost per individual, but they're, Steve, I would say maybe not more than half of what incarceration costs.
Yeah, I don't have, I'm not an accountant, so I don't have those type of figures. But
okay. Well, where do the savings come from, Judge Serbeck?
We don't have them 24/7.
Okay.
And you don't, we don't have the kind of security that's required in a penitentiary. We don't have that kind of an administrative staff structure. They'll be expected, for the most part, with the exception of when they get into problems and require a halfway house, which is usually driven by substance abuse. They'll be on their own to live. They're expected to work and get a job. We do have, you know, you have to pay staff. You have to pay staff for security purposes. You have to pay staff for programming purposes, as well as administration. We have been able, that was one of the things we were always proud of when we began and continuing today, that we have been able to reallocate the funding for community corrections. Community corrections is our operational arm, and therefore the program is essentially funded by and through the DOC budget, but at a substantially lesser number because of the issues of residency and so on.
We are talking about prisoner reentry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You also can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten a tweet from a listener that I think I can get. It looks like it's a little garbled here at the end, but it says the biggest issue to reentry is employment opportunities, period. What legislators are working to, it looks like, expand possibilities or to work on this? Who are sort of the champions of this kind of program? Steve Kiever.
Well, that's out of my realm authority, so I would probably defer to Judge Serbeck on this, but he's probably more aware of who are the players are in that field than I.
Judge Serbeck?
I'm struggling to recall names. All I can tell you is that we continue to be well received at the state legislature. And I can't call. I'm not good with calling names, but.
Well, let me reframe it a little bit then Judge Serbeck. In terms of the needs for this program and the need, even larger, the needs for, you know, for solving this problem and presenting more opportunities for Michael Coffey and other folks in his situation, what do we still need to do? What things would help?
As I mentioned before, what would help us in Fort Wayne is a transitional housing unit.
Mm-hmm.
We have tried several times to get that done, and we just don't have the funding to do it. We are back in negotiations between the Department of Correction and with our county commissioners in hopes that we can come up with something. That's probably the biggest issue for us is housing, and that hierarchy of the old philosophical, psychological thing about needs. People, that's one of the real basic needs. People need to have a secure place to live. And when they don't, lots of the people I see from week to week wind up with problems based not of their own creation. They allow themselves to get drawn into things, of course. But not having a good, secure, stable place to live with good support around them, but rather a lot of temptation around them that from time to time they give into.
How much money, by the way, to get that transitional housing, how much money are we talking about there?
The round number we've been talking about is $5
million. $5 million? Okay.
That's to buy the facility.
To buy the facility.
Then you got to run it, and I think we probably have the operational budget to run it, but it's the initial capital outlay that's difficult. I think they just put one up in South Bend for, my understanding was they invested about $4
million. Okay, so.
Up there.
You're a more expensive market then, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
25% more.
But in the meantime, it's far less than what it's going to cost the state to continue to build penitentiaries. One of the things, if I can sort of interject outside of your question, one of the things I thought of is, as you and Steve were talking earlier about some of these issues, was I wanted to be careful that we made it very clear that at least I'm, and I'm sure neither Steve nor anyone else, is being critical of the Department of Corrections.
Mm-hmm.
The Department of Corrections does the job that they do very well.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, that's not a place for people to get better. And the other benefit that we have now that we didn't even have 10 years ago there's a great deal of research out there now that didn't even exist 10 years ago. One of the main sources of it is out of the University of Cincinnati, of how people react, correctional programs and the quality of correctional programs and what works. This state and most other states are adopting, we certainly have adopted requirements in probation and the kind of programs that we're running in reentry, and I think in parole included to the extent that they have programming, of requiring the use of programs that have been tested, that are called evidence-based, as opposed to somebody saying, well, I have a good program that'll take care of this, and just give me the folks and I'll fix them. We don't do that anymore. And when I started on the bench, I started on the bench in 1988, and one of the hardest things I had to do was, as you either sent someone away for a short time or put them on probation, was assigning good kind of programming, because it was kind of a knee-jerk thing. I was not trained in that, nor were any of us. We now have research that shows what works, what kind of programming helps people with what kind of issues, and determining, as I say, when we first bring people back, there's a risk needs assessment. And in fact, Indiana has adopted a universal risk needs testing and evaluation that's used across the board for pre-sentence, for probation, for reentry. The Department of Corrections is using it. Everybody's using the same tool. So we all have the same results, risks and needs, and we have research to know what programs effectively deal with what needs to reduce people's risks.
We are talking about prisoner reentry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Donna, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Your question, please.
Yeah, I missed the first part of the call, so thank you for your program. But my question is for Michael, and I think Michael made a good point. I'm someone who's been in recovery for a number of years, not had the benefit of having experienced the prison system, but was, you know, could have been. And Michael mentioned the access to substance abuse assistance. And so my question is really two-part. One for Michael, what kind of improvements does he believe could be made to access to either 12-step programs or, you know, other kind of resources? And then secondly, does the reentry program apply to women? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you very much for the call, Donna.
Welcome. Thank you.
Certainly. Well, Michael, I think that first part, she's clearly interested in your story.
Okay, Donna, this is what I have for you. For substance abuse treatment, it's not just that the treatment will be beneficial to somebody that's had prior or past substance abuse addiction, but what's even more important is when that individual that's incarcerated gets out of incarceration and is released to society, that individual himself or herself should continue in substance abuse treatment in some shape, form, or fashion. There's an old saying that once an addict, always an addict. You will always be a recovering addict, no matter what. There's people that say that, well, they drank for 10 years and then they stopped drinking and they quit drinking for, say, a year. And then they go out with friends and then they're at a bar or a club and then they decide to have a drink. Well, the trigger to that is hanging around those types of people that live them lives doing those types of things like clubbing and bar hopping and those sort of things. Those things are could easily mislead a person that has good intentions with their sobriety to continue in a good direction in life to cause that person to trip. That's one of the things I feel like is very important for somebody that's had prior substance abuse is to continue. That individual has to want to continue. And for me, I think that that's a lifelong situation.
Is that the biggest challenge for you in terms of this, Michael, would you say, personally?
I've had several times when I had used drugs in my life and sold drugs, and I had times when I relapsed. And I think that those times had come in my life when I didn't continue in my substance abuse treatment or stay in contact with a sponsor.
So it sounds like that's the most critical piece for you. It's kind of the hinge for everything
else. In part of my life, it has been that lifestyle that I chose to live, although I lived a good working class lifestyle also, but that part of my life tend to overrule that good side of my life.
So it would swallow up the other
eventually
stuff.
Eventually in time it will.
We are talking about prisoner reentry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Allen Superior Court Judge John Serbeck, Stephen Kiever, who is with the Indianapolis Reentry Educational Facility, and resident Michael Coffey. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about prisoner reentry. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. My guests are Allen Superior Court Judge John Serbeck, Steve Kiever, who is the superintendent of the Indianapolis Reentry Educational Facility, and Michael Coffey, who is a resident there. Just before the break, we got a call from Donna, who asked a two-part question. We didn't deal with the second part. I want to deal with that. Are these options available to women as well?
Well, Steve Kiever. From a Department of Corrections standpoint, while reentry is a focus for both males and females, there is not a women's facility similar to IREF facility.
So it's a harder road then.
It's a different road. Yes.
Yeah. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hello, how are you? I appreciate you answering my call.
Certainly. Your question, please.
Yeah, over the years I've listened to this discussion many times. I've been lucky enough to be involved in a business that does work for the city of Indianapolis. Mayor Ballard created a 3% goal for veterans. Now, it just the question, I guess, for the Allen Superior Court judge maybe, would be more knowledgeable, I guess all of your guests, but might be knowledgeable about this. Why doesn't NDOT and all its sections that contract work out to state to contractors doing work, engineering and construction? Why don't they create a goal for companies that will hire people with felonies, a goal, a 3-5% goal for people like that to employ these people? Has it been tried? What's your thoughts on that?
Thank you very much for the call, Jeff. We'll see if we can get you an answer. Judge Serbeck, I think Jeff directed that at least initially to you.
And I have not had any direct dealings with DOT.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't respond to that. I do know that there are, thanks to this Blue Jacket not-for-profit we have up here, they have been able to keep track of tax incentives and that sort of thing to encourage employers to bring on former offenders. I can't speak to the specifics of NDOT.
Steve Kiever, do we have a system that does reward people for giving, former prisoners job opportunities?
Well, over the years, the federal government has provided different incentives for private companies to hire those who have been convicted of felonies off the street. Those have come and gone over the years. I'm not exactly sure what the status of it is now. However, in response to his question, I mean, he was talking about veterans and then he was talking about DOT and so forth. Certainly we have people that work for DOT or through our agreement, as I referred to earlier, and there have been some occasions where they, upon release, either Department of Administration or other state agencies have agreed to hire them. I mean, at IREF, we have two units dedicated to veterans. And we provide a specialized program for veterans. We have specialists who are veterans themselves. And we focus on, again, veterans and veterans' efforts. Much of some of the information that's gone through the country, you can see where veterans courts in various locations, similar to what Judge Serbeck operates on a reentry court basis, have been developed. What we try to do is provide veterans, identify veterans, house veterans together, and then provide them veteran-specific programming so that they're aware of their benefits, they're aware of resources within the community upon their release. And again, but once they're released, in essence, the onus is on them to go forward and seek employment and access the available resources in the community.
We are talking about prisoner reentry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Doris, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. Your question, please.
I don't have a question exactly. I do have a comment. I know that a comment was made earlier that prisons are not a place to get better, and I would disagree with that because I've worked for the Department of Correction for a number of years and then was also an administrative position and now volunteer at the Indiana Women's Prison and know of a number of programs and have experienced great changes in some of the women that have participated in these programs. So it can happen if people take advantage of that opportunity.
Which programs are the most effective there, Doris?
Well, I'm most familiar. There are several. I'm most familiar with what's called the PLUS program, Purposeful Living Unit Serve. I helped develop that program before I retired from the program from the department, and it is a 16-month character and faith-based unit, and there are a number of programs involved within that that are consistent with the population. Like for women, we might have different programs than those in the men's facilities or the youth facilities. Community service is something that's emphasized in that program, as well as dealing with issues, could be substance abuse, could be domestic violence, all kinds of issues like that that we try to hit and encourage them also then to take leadership and to begin to contribute back to the community, both within the prison and outside. So that is one that has been proven by research to show its effectiveness, both in reducing conduct problems within the prison and then reducing recidivism.
Okay.
And the other thing that I would just like to mention as well mm-hmm. is the importance of volunteers in the prison system and all that they can bring to these different programs and the development of relationships that model for the inmates the kind of behavior we want them to have when they leave the institution. And then also to assist in some cases, like with the PLUS program, there are mentors who can help develop a relationship while they're there and then help with the reentry process. I've been mentoring a woman.
Doris,
if
I could real quickly, I want to give Michael a chance to speak
sure.
to you,
Good.
Speak
All
to
right.
your comments. Thank you very mm-hmm. much for the call.
Hey,
certainly,
hey Doris, how you doing?
All right, thank you.
Thanks. Okay.
I'm just going to elaborate on some things that IREF, as a new facility since 2006, started in Plainfield in 2006, and it's relocated to the old Indiana Women's Prison on Randolph Street. And IREF, we offer 26, that's 26 community service programs. What I'm trying to do is I'm going to explain to you a little bit what IREF has to offer in light of IREF being a new facility. Not only do we have the 26 self-help programs available, we have a family preservation center, and that's headed by Director Ms. Shirley. And inmates are required to take an inside-outside class for that, to participate in that program.
Can I ask a question real quickly, Michael?
Yes, sir.
On this, and you call me John. It's a friendly forum here. In terms of what Doris was saying, you've been in both a traditional prison situation and IREF. And I think it was Judge Serbeck who said, by and large, prisons are not places where people go to get better. Was that your experience or not?
For some people, that may be true. For a lot of people, I would say that prison is a place to get better because all prisons, in some shape, form, or fashion, offer rehabilitation. regardless of what type of programs they have at the particular institution. Mm-hmm. They offer some types of need assessments for the inmate there that's incarcerated at whatever given facility.
Well, and I think, to be fair, Judge Serbeck, you can step in and correct me if I'm misstating your position, but I think when you mentioned that, you're saying most prison facilities, their first responsibility is really to isolate people who might do others harm and
Absolutely.
Keep them away from us. And that,
Absolutely.
That anything else we can do is with them while they're there is a bonus, but the primary objective is just to make sure that the public is safe.
That's right. And as I said, nothing that I have said should be considered as critical of DOC. I have the greatest respect for DOC. I think they've run an excellent organization. They have a purpose in segregating people that have done serious wrong to the rest of the community.
We are talking about prisoner reentry here on No Limits. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. And we have gotten an email question from a listener named Randolph who says, can we get the state of Indiana, Indiana counties, and Indiana cities to set an example for private employers by hiring qualified convicts instead of denying convicts employment solely based upon the fact that they have a felony or a misdemeanor? There is a tremendous amount of discrimination against convicts, felons, when it comes to jobs availability. I think I'll keep that one with you, with Judge Serbeck.
Again, that's going to wind up being a county by county type of effort, and it will depend on relationships, as those things so often do. There's a larger picture, and there has been continuing effort in the legislature about. Closing criminal records or expunging criminal histories in order to avoid some of that bias. And it's an active debate. I think it's coming to the point where most everyone agrees. The question becomes the details, as so often it does. When is it that you close a record and under what circumstances can you reopen a record and all those sorts of things. We do have some ability to close records to avoid that stigma of a prior conviction. And it's an ongoing concern, debate about, where's the right place for it to land.
Well, I'll just ask for a personal opinion on your part. I mean, I think where Randolph's question is really, shouldn't the state of Indiana exert kind of moral leadership on this and set an example?
In a perfect world, yeah.
Okay.
It's a struggle to know, how many, what jobs there are and whether people are qualified to do them. I like the gentleman a couple of calls ago about the some kind of a minimum percentage.
Mm-hmm.
And those are all programs worth working on. It would be an excellent message for the state to do that kind of thing. And I don't know what levels of bias you have, with county or state agencies in not hiring a felon. I don't know whether that exists or not. I know lots of companies don't hire folks with felony records. I know others, like the gentleman we heard from Florida, who makes a concerted effort to, and then winds up being disappointed when folks don't follow through. And that's life.
We are talking about prisoner reentry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Clan, welcome to the program.
Hi, greetings. I was wondering what a status was. When I was taught at Martin University, I also taught at the old women's prison. And the vast majority of the women, that's back when they could take college credit courses, said, who better to go into social work than people who have failed the system and the system has failed them? And, there's 20% probably in the class you knew they're going to be right back in. But the previous governor eliminated the ability to take college credit courses. And I was wondering, number one, has it been reinstituted? And number two, why not?
Good questions. Thank you very much for the call, Glenn. Stephen Kiever, I'll throw that one your way.
Well, I can't answer why not. That, again, that's not within my realm of responsibility. But you know, we have vocational training at IREF that the residents are able to participate from building trades, culinary arts, business technology. We have a GED program. We do have, in concert now with Oakland City University, the opportunity here that may be forthcoming here, the way it looks, I'm optimistic that we are going to have the possibility of actually conducting college classes in the facility. Now, these are not going to be grant supported and so forth as they were previously, so there's going to be some modified structure to it and specifics to it, but it may very well be coming here in the near future.
We're getting close on time here, and I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't ask Michael, what do you want to do when you get out? What is your dream, your ambition?
Well, fortunate for me, I have some good people in my life today that have been in my life and that have been supportive of me in this incarceration, and that would be my employer. And that's pretty uncommon.
Who are they? Go ahead and give them a shout out.
I worked for the Ale Emporium in Castleton for owner Mark Loris. I've worked for him on and off since 1991. And the Ale Emporium is a restaurant sports bar. Mm-hmm. And it's been there at 86 in Allisonville Road for 34 years now. Okay. So it's been a blessing, and I still have my job as a manager there when I'm released. So for me, I'm just fortunate where, again, I'd like to reiterate, a lot of people getting out of prison are in my position when I get out. I think that somewhere down the line, we need to get to the point where incarcerated individuals, before they leave prison, already have a place to live and they already have job security before release.
And I am afraid that is going to have to be the last word, although the last word for just now. We've still got a lot of listeners who wanted to join this conversation. I apologize to them for not being able to get all of you in. We're going to continue this conversation. I'd like to have all of you back at some point. We have been talking about prisoner reentry here on No Limits. My guests have been John Serbeck, Allen County Superior Court Judge Stephen Kiever of the Indianapolis Reentry Educational Facility, and Michael Coffey, who's a resident there. I'm John Krall. Thanks for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.